coming up? What's going down? What's coming to our town? It's gonna be good. Hope it don't flood. Oh, it's what's upstream.
That new music.
Ben Markle, hard at work, good man. Yeah. Okay, everyone, welcome to What's Upstream here on KGOAT Radio, KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial, streaming over clearcreekradio.com. I am your host, Mark Cuccinella, joined by my co-host, Lori Beckel. And good afternoon, Lori.
Howdy, nice. Mark. Good to see you.
And if it's the third Wednesday of the month, it must be time for some history.
Yay. Exactly. Yeah. We've got our history women here. Yeah. No better.
Lou Howard, welcome back to the show. Thank you.
Keeps us entertained.
And Chris Bradley. So we're going to, the subject today, I understand, is going to be the history of schools here in Clear Creek County. Boy, I can't wait to hear about the school up in Alice. That's a big one. Okay.
Oh, you want me to kick off?
Oh,
I usually
sure.
do. Okay. There are 18 school districts that I have a record. And anybody know what school district number one might be?
Silver Plume.
No, although there would be logic to it starting at one end of the county and coming down. Empire. Was district
well,
number
well,
one.
Well,
oh, there we go.
Yep, and I've got some information on Empire. Then Cresswell, which is later called Beaver Creek or Beaver Brook, over on the east end. Georgetown was district three, then Dumont, Idaho Springs was district five. Silver Plume, Silver Dale, Silver Creek, organized March 8th, 1890. There may have been an earlier something that was eight for a while. Lamartine, Lawson, Brookvale, Freeland was district number 12. They did not have a district number 13. Either I didn't find it. It was a very early district, or by superstition, they decided to avoid 13.
Yeah.
14 was Brownville, 15 Grass Valley, which is later combined with Idaho Springs. 16 is Alvarado, 17 Fall River, 18 Red Elephant, and 19 Alice.
And
good old 19.
Good old 19. Well, if you think about life before cars, you know, it takes a long time to get to places.
And before school buses.
Yeah, definitely before school buses. But even that, it's a long way to go from one end to another. So,
but Lamartine had its own school district.
Yeah.
Interesting. There must have been quite a crowd of people up there.
Well, and separate from Freeland, you know.
Yeah.
And so Lamartine up high and Freeland down lower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In terms of what I gathered today, I would start off by saying I would apologize to some of the smaller districts that built wonderful schools, such as Alice, Dumont, Lawson, Brookville School, which is on the east end of the county, and that this is a big topic, so I kind of focused on Empire, Silver Plume, and Georgetown. But I thought I would start a little bit with Empire since it was school.
I saw that you've got the big book there.
I brought Louise Harrison's Empire and Birth and Past for those of you who like local history.
And yours is well worn.
Yes. Louise Harrison's book is wonderful. She read all of the local newspapers, the Georgetown papers, and there a little while it was the Empire Jackrabbit. There's a Empire newspaper for a while, all of which have been scanned, we might add, and are available on the library's website, the scanned versions. But she talks about, I'm going to not deal with this strictly in terms of time. She talks about 1891, it's Empire, and Empire is fighting. Now, it never has happened before or since, has it? There hasn't been an issue that's created a lot of...
Not since this morning.
Okay. So Louise Harrison starts talking about, and it's 1891, took a long time and a scandalous school war before Empire replaced the aged and drafty log cabin, which being the first schoolhouse in the county... had made Empire School District number one.
Mm.
And that's the small building that is in the park, correct? On US 40.
That's what they tell me.
That's what they tell me, too. The new schoolhouse, the only brick building in town, was completed in 1897. I don't know. Is it still standing?
No.
I didn't think so. I wonder if it was taken out by the highway.
I wonder where it was.
Yeah, that yeah. we will. That's the thing about this, I came up with as many questions as I did answers. Okay. The school war began in 1891 when the school board, in direct opposition to the choice of the townspeople, never a good thing, hired Mrs. Bertie Abel,
yeah.
I think it's pronounced, okay, as teacher. Miss Abel reported for duty at the venerable log schoolhouse, but for the first time in its history, the single room seemed too large for Miss Abel and the solitary pupil who sat in the classroom, so there was only one. The people's choice, Mrs. F.F. Pott, was teaching about 30 pupils in a vacant house belonging to Mrs. J. Vanderfort. Their indignant parents presented a petition bearing 55 signatures to their offensive school board. I don't know, it seems a little harsh. To George W. Vanthorp and Amos Morse, the undersigned, having the welfare of the school district in view, do ask of you that you resign the office of directors of the school district for the following reasons. First, you were elected to the office by trickery and misrepresentation. Second, you have persistently and shamefully ignored the wishes of 9/10 of the parents of the school. Third, you are in no sense justified in diverting the school fund of this district to the benefit of relatives of one of the school board without regard to the protests of the people having children to send to school. Therefore, we pray you to resign. At this point, Miss Abel had the grace to resign, but the school board countered with a notice to Mrs. Putt. You are hereby notified that the premises you now occupy for your school is the property of School District Number 1 of Clear Creek County. We, the undersigned members of the Board of Trustees of said district, demand that you vacate said premise forthwith, as we intend to begin public school in the house immediately. Okay. Bristling with indignation, the townspeople rallied around Mrs. Putt, while the Georgetown Courier gleefully quoted them verbatim. Now, you can just see, I mean, not that there would be anything between the towns at all.
No.
The Van Antwerp, so this is from the Courier, the Van Antwerp school ran 1 month with one scholar in attendance. Mrs. Putt's school is yet running full blast with 30 happy, contented scholars in attendance every day, and will so continue to run during the winter. Mrs. Putt had stood by us in this trouble, and we propose to stand by her. The rope that Mr. Van Antwerp gave us to hang ourselves with has become fastened around his own neck. Well, that sounds a little hard. However, towards the end of October, Mrs. Putt received such a highly advantageous offer to teach in a Denver grade school that she could not do otherwise than accept. Her department cast quite a gloom over the patrons of Empire School, and the children cried one after the other at the thought of losing the teacher who had become so entwined around their hearts. We may heartily congratulate ourselves that the most stubborn and contrary member of the board will not remain in office longer than May 1892. I love local newspapers. Anyway, Miss Abel was reinstated and attained a record 70 scholars. Mr. Van Antwerp had his revenge at the post office, however, where he sold postage stamp, flowers, hay, grain, groceries, drugs, and general merchandise. He kept a big green parrot chained to a perch near the door. The parrot swore outrageously at everyone who entered the building. Occasionally it escaped its perch and flew clumsily to a nearby tree. Grabbing the carrying cage, Mr. Van Antwerp went in pursuit. Following a furious exchange of oaths, the parrot, exhausted at last, would enter the cage. Anyway, it's...
Oh, Empire.
But there was one other Empire event that I should tell you about. It's actually a little later. Oh, that's the wrong town. Hang on. Bear with me. It's here. This had to do, Mark was just talking about from first to eighth grade suffering the wrath of a variety of nuns. So this was in 1911. Arrested horsewhipping a teacher. An incident for which the entire population of Clear Creek County is extremely sorry and many of them indignant occurred last Monday at Empire, at which Mrs. L. Rockwell entered the schoolhouse and horsewhipped Miss Cora Milne.
Wow.
Miss Milne, who is employed as a teacher at Empire, was disciplining one of the Rockwell boys and made him stay in the room during recess. The report is that the lad became impertinent, calling her names for which she shook and slapped him, causing a scab over a fever sore in the boy's lip to break and the lip to bleed. The boy went home and showed the bleeding lip to his mother, who went to the schoolhouse armed with a heavy horsewhip, which he applied with vigor to the young lady, raising 16 welts on the body, arms, and face of the teacher and cutting gashes in her arms.
Wow.
That's terrible.
That is terrible. The case was put in the hands of the district attorney on Wednesday and a warrant issued for Mrs. Rockwell's arrest.
Yay.
Yeah, and she was given a hearing that afternoon and bound over to the county court for trial today.
Now, the Rockwells are still here in
still,
the county.
They're still around. Yeah. Miss Milne, I know, and I almost didn't want to say the name, but, it's over 100 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And she may have a reputation with the rest of the family. I don't know.
Listen, we all, if we did, we in our did. Families, right?
Miss Milne is well known in Georgetown,
having
graduated from the Georgetown High School several years ago. She has many friends here. She's a quiet, peaceable girl, and it is the general belief of those who know her that she was disciplining the boy for good reason. Ouch. So anyway, that's what I have on school district number one and on Empire.
Empire sounds like a harsh place.
holy cow. I mean, no, you don't want to slap a boy. That's true, and certainly over a fever blister, but... generally, you don't get horsewhipped for doing that. So
yeah, for doing it.
For doing that. So I'll pass over to you.
Well, my brother went to school, though. They had the paddle still.
Yeah.
And he got it several times because he did not want to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
He did not behave.
But Tom Elliott brought me a great ruler that I took one look at, and I said, oh, man, this belonged in a Catholic school someplace. It's heavy, and I'm sure that there are a lot of knuckles through
I was
the years.
I was so happy to leave parochial grammar school and go to, but then I went to school with the Jesuit brothers and they had yardsticks, not rulers, yardsticks that they whipped.
That's what my dad had.
Yeah, but
boy,
they were made out of oak and they were half an inch thick.
Did you learn how to spell? Everybody I know that went to parochial school really did learn how to spell.
I was an excellent speller.
See, yeah. I still can't. So for what it's worth, your years of parochial school.
Well, they kind of quit teaching spelling, but anyway. Yeah.
So you have info on school history.
Well, most of mine is Idaho Springs, of course.
That's okay.
But
bits and pieces. I'll come back to Georgetown and so
I found a lot of articles of the whole county.
Yep.
There's a ton on schools. And the Empire found that very same article. And I thought, if we should get to that one for sure. So I'm glad you headed off with that. Idaho Springs had a lot of schools.
Yes. I think it's the only school district that had more than one school in the district.
Because same situation. And we actually had Fall River for a while, and Chicago Creek, Russell Gulch, and Idaho Springs had three schools in it, one at the West End, and then, of course, the Grass Valley at the East End, and then the Central School in town. So we had a lot of schools here.
Lou, when you mentioned Russell Gulch, I think a lot of people maybe don't realize that was a pretty large community up there
for
a number of years.
It was, and people loved living up there, because it was, and there were several families
up
there.
And Gilson Gulch? Gilson Gulch.
Was
it considered Clear Creek County, though?
Oh, well. You meant Gilson, not Russell.
I meant Gilson.
Yeah.
Was it considered Clear Creek County?
Yeah, that
We were just talking, there's both Gilson Gulch and Russell Gulch. We got them.
I got them switched.
Gotcha. Yeah. So Gilson Gulch is in Clear Creek. Russell Gulch is a big place.
Russell is in Central. Russell, Gilpin
County. That other county.
Yep. I meant Gilson.
The other guys.
So, yeah.
Gilson, yeah.
So there were a lot of schools here. And the whole county, it didn't take them long to get schools going. Mm. Everything I've read, and it had to be by subscription. Because there weren't taxes.
Well, there were taxes. They start, and that's part of what I didn't get a chance to figure out was when did they start charging for schools and how did they divvy it up? And that's why I think they have all the different districts that get a certain amount, maybe per pupil. But some of them were done private schools, they called it, where they would pay a dollar a week or something like that, which is a pretty good price.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in 1861, the first school and the first teacher here in Idaho Springs was Mrs. Dowd. And she actually taught the students in a chicken coop.
I heard about that.
So, and the price of tuition was 75 cents in gold dust.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You had to pay. So... So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, but they built a building driving four posts into the ground covered with pine boughs and with a piece of carpet for the door. And the carpet, having crossed the plains in 1859 on a wagon from New York, and then the second school, so after they got out of basically a tent or whatever shelter, they went to the chicken coop house. Okay. So
that was an upgrade.
Oh yeah, coop. Yeah. I mean, had a real door probably, and it was at the rear of a home, which stood on Colorado Boulevard near 14th Avenue, where the great hall of the West Building of the United Church now stands. Okay. So, guess what? We're just right out there.
Yeah.
Not very far from us. Mrs. Del Lamar, wife of a surveyor, started the school, but when her four-year-old daughter died of scarlet fever, the school closed. And in 1862, a log cabin at Colorado and 17th Avenue that had been used as a courtroom was used to house a school with about 12 pupils. So you can tell how early, I mean, they started school right away. And Georgetown did, too, from what I've read in the newspapers. And as, like I said, the school was supported by subscription. And by the year 1868 to 69, the students had increased to 25. And at the time, Spanish Bar and Idaho Springs formed a district, leveled a tax for support, and built a frame building at the corner of 12th Avenue and Colorado Boulevard. A room was added in 1880 when enrollment went to 100. So that's pretty amazing. So that's not counting the Chicago Creek and the St. Mary's and all of that, you know. So by 1884, the accommodations were so inadequate that citizens voted a bonded indebtedness of $15,000 to build a brick three-story structure at 13th and Colorado Boulevard to house both grades and high school levels. It had eight rooms and was occupied in 1885. So they progressed rapidly, I think.
Yeah.
The first high school graduated class consisted of three students in 1890. The school census for that district was 500 school-aged children in 1890, 800 in 1895, 911 in 1900, and 1,001 in 1902. But that's for the whole district. The Grass Valley School consolidated with Idaho Springs in 1890. So it was all by itself down there. And I read more about the Grass Valley School because, you know, it's City Hall now.
Right.
And so when I talked that, they let me go see the records. They're actually in the bell tower at the over there. But so I always thought that they just built the building right away, but it wasn't true. I read more about it, and they actually bought a house and property from a gentleman, and they just started school, and then they built,
the
Grass Valley later. So sometimes in pictures, you see a picture, and you go, that's not Grass Valley, you know, because it doesn't look like the building we know
but
now.
But it's not a chicken coop either. So
yeah,
that's
it's not
good.
A chicken coop.
It never was a chicken coop, you know. As far as I know, that was the only one in the county. Yeah, I haven't read about any other chicken coop.
I wonder about Alvarado. They must have been in somebody's, either in their house or outside.
Somewhere. Right, because a room would be great. But, I mean, to start out with basically a lean-to, I guess you would call that, with a carpet for your door. But, you know, they did what they had to do. So in 1900, the frame building in Grass Valley was replaced with a brick structure to house lower elementary students in Grass Valley.
And that's an interesting time period. In 1900, the county has gone through fits and starts with silver mining, kind of, and to go ahead in 1900 and build.
You had to build a school, really. This building was moved from its original location, as you all know. It's our City Hall now.
Yeah.
So thanks to G.G. Bell and all the people in the Historical Society at that time, they made sure that building was saved.
Yep.
And I remember them rolling it up and putting it over there.
Because it used to be right about where Safeway is now, is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, that's where it was. And you wouldn't think, I mean, and the Weston School was at the other end.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that's... To us, that's not very far apart in this day and age. But then,
if you're walking,
yeah,
yep.
And there were a lot of students.
Well, there were a lot of eligible students. They didn't always go. It's interesting. They were required to do an inventory every year. And I've got some information on Brownville where they talk about the number of kids in the census and then the number of kids that actually show up at school, which is they're required to say there were 500, but if only 200 showed up.
Yeah. You know. Well, and
but it's still
and before
it's still
the taxes and they had to pay a subscription, you know, I mean. Yeah. And they, all the articles that I've read, they really had to make their case for a school. Mm-hmm. They had to push the people big time because there were some who said, no, we don't need a school, you know. And they really had to pursue that earnestly.
Think about it. If you've got 500 school-age eligible children and only 200 are going to school, you got to assume their parents don't really care that much about
or they're working
paying for paying for education.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And I really this is a topic where I found myself wanting to just do more research. This one could go on forever, but I wanted to look into what the people were paying and how much did they pay versus how much then they added to a school district tax. And anyway, I don't have time for
that. That's
a
lot more research.
I know, but that's the part I like.
I know. So anyway, this article is from the Historical Society. It's from the our history book, but it pretty much covers everything, so I'm not going to reinvent it. But I loved reading all the newspaper articles that back all of what they've said in here.
Yep.
And
there are two, there is the Kago tape that Greg did of Chi-Chi Bell, Buff Rutherford, Verona Zimmerman, and me.
Right.
That I've got out online. And then he also did an interview of Laverne Boland and Margaret Carlson. And I've got that. I just need to figure out how to put that online because they talk about the early school up at Chicago Creek.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And Chicago Creek today, I still probably wouldn't want to, if I was a child, coming down from Chicago Creek. But,
man. Something about building a school in right at 1900, it occurs to me, we've talked over the months and years about how people came here to mine and try to strike it rich. And, I think the mindset was this is going to be a transient community. Mm-hmm. But when you pass a bond like that for a school, you know, you've committed to Idaho Springs existing, into the future.
Yeah. And Chris and I talked about that before on the show because a lot of the Idaho Springs people stayed and they brought their families out. So it was a pretty sound community, actually. But I was surprised the more I've learned about it. It's pretty civilized in Idaho Springs. I mean, they still had the taverns.
Empire is quiet, mellow, till you fight. Then you fight like crazy. Then it's quiet, mellow, which is the part of the valley, the wide valley, and the sun comes up. The sun comes up in the morning. What a concept. I live in Georgetown. The sun comes up about noon.
So, anyway, Chris and I can have talked about maybe we might have to do two shows because right now I'm just kind of covering the more early information. But so in 1900, a one-room brick school building was erected at the west end of Idaho Springs. So that's when the west end school started for the lower elementary grades in this area. And one thing that I thought it was interesting is we think, okay, you need to go through 12th grade, but nobody hardly did that.
No. Yeah.
That didn't happen. So when they're saying elementary, I'm not really sure what they mean by elementary.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you went through 8th grade, that was a pretty big deal.
And the laws changed,
I mean, you
too.
Could become a teacher, you know, when you've gone through 8th grade, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, today it's the Baptist Church. So if you go by the Baptist, and if you look at it, it looks like a school building.
Yeah, that's because it was.
Right.
So that was the west, and, that's just fun, right?
Yeah.
And so then, 1900, a frame structure was built in Gilson Gulch. Mm-hmm. And that's where we talked about Beatrice Rule. Yeah. Because she taught there and she had to walk there. And if you walk there, it's all uphill and,
right.
and it's wintry. And she would go over to Argo and ride the, what is it called? It's a lift.
She, yeah.
And the lift would take
she'd
her
walk
up.
In and they'd take her in on like a cart and then.
Right. And she would ride that up on really bad days.
Well, or just a haul, probably a bucket like they'd use for the
right.
ore.
And so they'd get her up Gilson high Gulch? Enough. That
Gilson, yeah, what point? Gilson Gulch is down there, back behind Starbucks in that
okay.
area.
It's that gulch.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she would ride the lift up there, and then she wouldn't have to walk as far because the weather was, you know, sometimes pretty extreme, but she went.
Yeah.
And when you think about what the school teacher did, she didn't just teach school. She had to go in and start the fire. She cleaned the building.
Yeah, maintained the building.
She
yeah.
did everything, right. you know. And there were some male school teachers as well. I haven't read about any in Clear Creek County, but there used to be male teachers too. But that was a big job, and the school teachers loved their jobs.
Yeah.
They really wanted to be school teachers. They just, you know, when you read.
Unless they got whipped.
Yeah, now getting whipped, that's a whole different thing. So, okay, Empire. But. It could happen anywhere.
It could happen any place.
It could happen anywhere.
But it happened there.
Yeah. And I worked in the school district, so and I understand that as being a parent. You're very protective of your child.
Of course you are.
And that I mean, you just are. You know, I would never go to that extreme for sure, but it was a different time. And we have to always remember that, you know, 100 years ago, it was a different frame of mind because you traveled out here all the way here. You're a tough person, and you have to defend yourself, and you know, it's a whole different mindset.
So Georgetown, Idaho Springs, Silver Plume all had big brick schoolhouses at one point in time. And the Idaho Springs school was built when, in the 1880s?
The first brick, Grass Valley they rebuilt. And the other one, 1900?
The big building, was it right around?
I think 1900, a one-room brick school building.
Nope.
That was the West End.
That's West End.
Okay, so the other one was actually down here where the school is now.
Yeah.
Well, it said, by 1900, the bonded indebtedness was paid off, and in 1902, the district passed a bond issue for $10,000 to build a brick addition onto the central school. And so that's
central
what it was
school.
Called,
okay.
was the central school.
Okay.
And to better accommodate the 7th and 8th grades and the high school.
Yeah.
In 1902, the value of the existing school buildings of the Idaho Springs School District number 5 was $40,000, and taxable property valuation of the district was $1,411,747. That's a lot of money for, you know.
Well, they would when they were dividing up the section, township and range, they would give a section, one section or two sections, to the school districts that they could then sell for to raise money to help them with schools. And I wonder if that was part of what they
I bet it was. So it was 1884 when they built the building.
Okay.
And so
84, that's interesting. So 74 Georgetown, 84 Idaho Springs, and 94 Silver Plume. I don't know why that floats my boat, but every 10 years, you know.
You know what? Everything is 10 years.
Yeah.
If you think about it, that's how I remember all the dates.
The dates, they're all 10
easy.
Years
Everything's
apart.
A 10-year.
Yep.
For some reason, everything that you do. I won't go into the rest because it's kind of later, and if we decide to do another
show, we'll
because,
do a later one. Yeah.
You know, the plumber building and all that.
Yes, the plumber building, which has me fascinated.
So are we going to move on to Georgetown?
Well, Georgetown, Silver Plume.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break and be back momentarily, folks, talking about the schools in Clear Creek County, the history of schools. Here's a little bit of music to get us through.
Oh,
All right, everyone. Welcome back to What's Upstream here at K-Goat Radio. We're here with the history women of Clear Creek County, Chris Bradley and Lou Howard. And you're listening to KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial, streaming over clearcreekradio.com. Check out that website. You'll like it. Lori, you got something for us?
I do. I have a real quick PSA, and that is Senator Michael Bennett will be at Bojo's this afternoon, Wednesday. This is the 21st, I believe, of January. He will be there at 3 o'clock. This is a campaign stop for his Senate race. For the race for governor.
He is currently
our U.S. Senator. And so it'll be at Bojo's Pizza. Anybody who would like to come and meet Senator Bennett, stop by around 3 o'clock, 3 to 4 o'clock.
Very good. Okay, we're going to get back to the history, the early history of the school districts and the 19 school districts. Actually, it was 18, wasn't it?
It was 18 because they didn't use number 13.
Yeah, nobody likes that number for some reason.
And I really do feel like we have to apologize to a certain extent for those wonderful school districts that actually built structures that we're not going to get to today because we end up with a lot of information. But Lawson, Dumont, Alice, and Brookvale.
Mm-hmm. And Fall River. I was interested. You mentioned Fall River. Do you have any idea where the school was?
No, I don't. I don't know if you do. And that's something that would be interesting to trace with all of these is where the schoolhouses were. Mm-hmm. Were they in somebody's house? Was it in a coop?
In a chicken coop.
Or not?
Or the lean-to.
Or a lean-to, yeah. Okay, so I have some information on Georgetown and Silver Plume, including Brownville. And by the way, Brownville and Silver Plume fight like cats and dogs, which is wonderful fun because it's just that way, you know. Silver Plume and Georgetown fight unless somebody comes in from the outside, and then they stand together and they work together very well. And the west end of the county fights with the east end of the county unless somebody comes in from the outside. Then we stand together when we, you know, anyway, it's just if you think things have changed, they haven't. We're dependent a lot upon early newspapers for this kind of information on schools. And so I have information going back to 1868, which seems to be when things get started. So May of 1868, Georgetown paper, the new board of directors for the school district intend entering upon their duties immediately and will establish two schools, one in Upper and the other in Lower Georgetown as soon as possible. Upper Town would be where the school is now. Lower Town would be down by Rutherford Stables, not quite that far down. And then it says 2 weeks later, the board of directors failed in their effort to start the school in Upper Georgetown on Monday last. This failure was not the fault of the board, but was occasioned by the backing out of a party from whom they had rented a schoolroom. Another room has been obtained, and the school will commence on Monday next. About a year later, Miss Clark has opened a private school in the log building next to the public school in the first ward. Citizens of Georgetown, shortly thereafter, take immediate steps to build a schoolhouse. And also in 1871, the private school taught by Mrs. S.W. Knott will commence next Monday, January 24th, terms $1 per week, invariably paid in advance. You couldn't, unless you had that horsewhip. Mrs. Knott is a teacher of more than ordinary ability, and we trust she will receive a fair share of public patronage. So you get the feeling that there are, if you want the kids to have more specific classes or perhaps more technical classes, that there was still available of, there were those available. By the way, you mentioned high school, and we talked about elementary versus high school. My friend Buff Rutherford, who attended the school in the old school in Georgetown, the brick school, said that he knew it was called high school because it was on the second floor. Which is really pretty cute when you think about it. That's where they had the high school. Well, okay, sure. It was up on the second floor. Anyway, there's another So then 1872, the school meeting on Monday, there was a crowd. Much interest was manifested. General Marshall was elected president of the board of directors unanimously. And Marshall Tunnel and Colorado Central and all that. The ground for a new school building has been purchased. Now let the building go up. So this is what becomes where my office is at the moment, the old school in Georgetown.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it never, never let it think that there could be anything done without fussing. So August of 1874, the contract for the erection of the new schoolhouse has been let by the city council to James Cree, who takes the job at $17,000 and is to complete the building by the 1st of January next. Mr. Cree commenced breaking ground on Wednesday on the school lot, blah, blah, blah. He's always force of hands of work. So that is August 1st. August 15th, all about a foundation. You know this is going to have to happen. The way to get a rousing big meeting, the way to get a rousing big meeting is to scatter a lot of handbills about town, calling upon the taxpayers to rally for a consultation upon some question supposed to involve their pecuniary interests. That was a moving cause of the meeting at McClellan Hall Tuesday evening. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Kempton called the assembled citizens to order, and Michael Kelly was called to the chair but declined the honor. Then he was called upon to speak, proceeded to give the reason for calling the meeting. A new schoolhouse was under contract, and the taxpayers were all interested in having a good foundation under it. He regarded the foundation now going in entirely insufficient, not like the one he proposed to build if he, not Cree, had gotten the contract. Oh, well, anyway, Michael Kelly.
Boy, that is exactly
it's just
the way
exactly. He's put different names in there.
Yeah. And dates.
Yeah, and Ernest McClellan was called out and gave his experience, blah, blah, blah. W.M. Clark did not know exactly what this meeting had to do with the matter. Selectmen had agreed upon plans and specifications, and the contractor was responsible to the board, and if he fulfilled the requirements of the specifications, he would be doing all it could be required. Mr. Dominguez wanted Mr. Boudreau to speak, but Mr. Boudreau declined. I mean, this is just like every public meeting we have ever been at. Mm-hmm. Mr. Monroe was called upon as superintendent of the work for the selectmen, and by the way, Monroe was a builder, to say whether the contractor was doing his duties. Stated that Mr. Cree was doing the work well according to specifications and doing even more than required. It was just such a foundation as Mr. Kelly had told him was the best that could be made. Mr. Monroe claimed to be about as good a, quote, wood butcher, end quote, as there was in Georgetown, and believed the foundation a good and sufficient one. James Cree, the contractor, explained the way the foundation was laid. Mr. Simons called upon, blah, 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 blah. Mr. Frazier wanted to know whether the meeting had any power to change plans and specifications, and there was laughter all about. The chairman was anxious that a vote should be taken to ascertain the views of the meeting in regard to the sufficiency. Nobody made any motion to this effect. I mean, this is the same, this accident. But a gentleman moved that we adjourn now and go to bed. The chairman, in putting the question, ignored the retiring clause, and the motion was carried. So anyway,
Chris, correct me if my memory is faulty here. But when before they renovated the building, mm-hmm. they brought it back up mm-hmm. to speed. I would say the only thing that was in its original condition was the foundation.
The foundation did pretty well. There was one place.
Okay.
Well, Bernard had put in a double wide garage door on the south side of the building, and so that was really tricky to to change that. But remembering the brickwork was done in such a way that it wasn't single brick, it was double or triple brick. So right. even though there were a couple places where there was some brickwork that had to be replaced, it wasn't as bad as we had first feared. I think that there's one corner of the building that's subsiding a little bit, but holy cow, it's 100 and however many years later, 150 years later, it's doing pretty well.
Let me ask you another question. The number that you quoted in that article was $17,000. I wonder, what did the renovation cost?
More than $17,000.
A million.
It's about that much per square foot. No,
it was a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, and Cree does end up coming back to the board. The new schoolhouse, this September of 1884, the new schoolhouse is progressing finely. Brickwork is already above the first story, and Mrs. Cree informs us that the building will be completed. Mrs. Cree, I think I missed her. By the 1st of December, the work is being done. He comes back and does, you know, from James Cree, showing that owing to errors made by the architect Lewis regard to the schoolhouse, Cree had been compelled to expend money involving a loss of $1,487.50, carrying out his contract with the city as contractor and asking that it be reimbursed. And it was referred to the town attorney. I just, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But it is a wonderful, it's a wonderful building, and it is still there.
It is a wonderful building.
And yeah. It's now, it's just like, well, of course, it's wonderful. I mean, walking into it when it was originally purchased by the Georgetown Trust, holy cow, you know, you walked into it and there was stuff everywhere. But the foundation was not a problem. And yes, it needed, we like heat and we like, you know, more wiring and those kinds of things. But
in a roof holds the weather
and that
out.
Was the Georgetown School and operated as the school until the mid-30s. And I think we're going to have to come back and do a second show, and we'll talk about the three of the 1930s buildings that are built during the Depression.
Let's remind our listeners that the library is moving into
the library. It looks like that is going through there. I think there's still a couple things back and forth, but at the present time, and it will be I can't wait to hear the sound of kids running up and down the hall again. I mean, my life, I currently work with the archives, which are upstairs in a very quiet room, although it's above ground, which my archives at the county wasn't. And so it's been wonderful, and I like it when it's really quiet. But then again, it's just, it'll be a wonderful room for kids to be going up and down the hallways. And we'll have other kids wondering if high school was upstairs. Mm-hmm. So briefly, Brownville and Silver Plume. So there was, in 1879, says the new school district was recently organized at Brownville, including the territory west of the Burley Tunnel. The district includes 80 children of school age. School was conducted 1 week at the close of the term, and says who the... So then there's a fuss, as you might guess. There's a fuss between between Brownville and Silver Plume. Dear sir, in your last issue, an article appeared from your Silver Plume correspondent concerning our Brownville District School, which seems to be a very discouraging letter to appear before the public. We had only 80 pupils in our school census list in 1880, and we had in attendance at the school, as the teachers' books will show, for the last term, 43 pupils, or an average attendance of 37 and a fraction. So that's where we get the difference between the census amount, which is usually larger. This quarter, we have 46 names enrolled in the teachers' book, and we've always thought that our school was prospering finally. Silver Plume School on the last year's census had 240 names of school age, and they have about 120 pupils attending school. They say their schoolhouse is not large enough to accommodate all of their children. Now, this would be a wooden school. This is a smaller school. Now, if the house is not large enough, why don't the citizens of Silver Plume build a new one? I see no reason why Brownville should consolidate with Plume in order to build another one. So, as you can guess, Brownville wants to keep its own school. Mm-hmm. Silver Plume wants to build a new school. That's Silver Plume's problem. Anyway, Silver Plume ends up with the Brownville school goes out of business, I think probably around the turn of the century. And at that point in time, maybe before then. At that point in time, Silver Plume is talking about building a new school. And it's interesting that they build their new school in 1894. Interesting because basically the economy has taken a really major shift on the west end of the county with silver mining in 1893 in the repeal of the Sherman Silver Purchase Act. So you wouldn't think that 1894 would be the time that they would build a beautiful two-story new school, but they do. There were commencement exercises of the Silver Plume School, and this is back 1890. Were to have taken place last night and this evening at the rink. Great preparations have been made at the skating rink for the event, but on account of an unforeseen accident which might have ended more seriously, the exercises will be held in the open air this evening. As the crowd began to gather at the rink, full of enthusiasm and expectation, the floor gave way with about 200 people on it, and it sunk about 16 inches to the ground.
Oh, wow.
There was a general panic and stampede. Women fainted, and all things were thrown in together. Doggone, I mean, of all the things that I've done in my life, Did women really faint more often in 19th? It was probably the corsets.
Yeah, I was going to say corset.
The corsets of the Anyway, so that was 1890. There was general panic and stampedes. Women fainted and all were thrown in together. The floor gave way, the walls began to spread, and the entire building swayed bodily over against Cliff's Bar.
Oh, boy.
So that was 1890. By 1893... they are contemplating a new schoolhouse. The school board has been actively engaged in seeing what could be done in way of a new school building. One of the plans is of a building to be constructed of brick and stone, two stories high with basement, containing six rooms, each 23 by 27 feet, with cloakrooms, closet, etc., which would make a fine appearance and provide ample accommodation for the children of the district for many years at least. Building can be erected at cost of $8,000 or $8,500 complete, with furnaces and everything, with furnaces, and everything excepting furniture. Other plans call for smaller, less expensive building, but in any event, they go ahead with the larger building. And they kind of have to because the school, while they're getting ready for the new building, the old building burns. So whether it was kids just having fun or not, I don't know. But in any event, the Silver Plume School then is built in 1894. It has a lovely structure. And I should let you talk more about East.
I wanted to slip a comment in here, if I may. I just think that it says something about the fortitude of the people in that era.
Yeah.
They're in this economic downturn.
Yeah, and they go ahead and do it.
Somehow they find the courage and the foresight to build this beautiful facility.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to bring up, Chris, was help me out with this quote. But somebody said along the way, I remember you telling us this, that something to a compliment to Silver Plume that I love a town that the biggest building in town is the biggest building in town is the school and the smallest
is the jail. Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Awesome.
It was one of the labor union guys. Yes, is it Eugene V. Debs? Yeah, and it's true, but it's at the same point in time that Silver Plume goes ahead and puts in a water system and other things that. You know, you look back on it and say, what? You know, the 1890s, yes, it's a positive time, 1890 to 1893 when there's the Sherman-Silver Purchase Act. But once they repeal the Silver Purchase Act and things are in rough shape nationally. But Silver Plume believes in it until the 1896 election. And once William Jennings Bryan doesn't get elected, they find that kind of hard. But in any event, they do build this wonderful school building that is still there, used as a museum these days. I talk too much.
No, you do not. I just said I found the article on Beatrice Roots.
Well, oh, good, good.
It'll be better to read it than you have it more accurately.
I'm interested.
Account of this. Miss Beatrice Rule left on Tuesday morning for Trinidad, Colorado, where she will spend a portion of her vacation with the family of Reverend O.L. Orton, former pastor of the Methodist Church in the city. This young lady has well earned a good vacation, for nearly every morning during the school year, she has walked from Idaho Springs to Gilson Gold School and returned in the evening. The trail led up Vivian Gulch, up and down Rose and Spirit Gulches, and over Seton Mountain, a distance of approximately 3 miles. Occasionally, when the snow was deep, she would ride into the Newsome House Tunnel, which is Argo Mill,
right,
to the Gem Mines, get into a skip, and make an elevation ride to the surface, a distance of 2,200 feet.
Wow.
This would land her within a short distance of the school. Teachers who complain about their daily duties may take her walks as an example of endurance in addition to teaching the required hours. So
she lived a long time. Chi-Chi interviewed her, and I have an oral history, but it's really rough. It was in the early stages of doing things. Anyway, I've digitized it, and I think there may be somebody that can make it sound better than it did originally. But
yeah, that would be great. So I did go back and listen.
To, yeah.
I can't say enough about the library site, because you could just spend hours and hours just looking at all of that stuff. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. But thank you to the library district. And we're getting ready to do an additional $5,000 worth of scanning in 2006. And I think we'll do the Clear Creek Mining Journal, and we should be able to do that from 1929 up into the 1950s. So that will be, it's the better paper of the two. I mean, I live in Georgetown, so I have a certain Georgetown thing, but oh my, the Georgetown papers in the 1930s are horrible. No, they are. Well, they're horrible. And the Idaho Springs paper, Idaho Springs is becoming the larger community, and it's a better newspaper. Yeah. So we'll focus on Idaho Springs.
It depends on the editors, right? Pretty much.
Well, and how much of the local news there is. I mean, Georgetown is getting smaller and smaller, and I think you've heard me before say, you know, one week, you know, Henry Anderson went to Boulder this week.
Yeah.
And the next week, Henry Anderson came back from Boulder, and you're writing, well, there's a chapter right there.
Exactly.
Anyway, but I look forward to having up into the 50s, hopefully.
All right.
Lou, what time period was that where she was making that journey?
Well, she was one of the earlier teachers, and they didn't, I mean, after they consolidated all of those little elementary schools into Idaho Springs. So it would have been early. It would have been late 1800s, 90? I would guess.
Yeah, and with the Newsom Tunnel, which becomes the
article. Well, actually, this article was written in 1909.
Yeah, so right around the turn of the century, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of the consolidation and everything else is something that I would be really interested in looking into a little more, which we can do once the newspapers are there into the 50s. Because I think it was statewide, it was very contentious, and if you think that they would fight back when, you know, all of a sudden saying, no, we're going to just have all the kids go to high school one place or two places, I think maybe they would do that. Anyway, but I'm not sure.
It's always contentious. It's always contentious. I mean, it's always in our era, it's contentious. Yeah. You know. Well, I just have a couple fun little articles, because this is 1917, actually. Many school children physically defective. As a result of the recent physical examination of the pupils of the Idaho Springs schools, surprising conditions are found to be prevalent. Of 335 students, which that tells you a lot of students, we found our boys and 112 girls have defective vision. 12 boys and 17 girls have defective hearing, and 32 boys and 26 girls have defective breathing.
Breathing? Like asthma?
Could be.
Yeah, it makes you wonder.
It does. It really makes you wonder, because we have fresh air here.
Yeah.
But I can, just from my own personal experience, when you have wooden fires in your house and coal fires, you are going to have some breathing problems, and that's what they had.
And you've got all those stamp mills running.
Yes.
You know, they have to be powered, and they're belching smoke all day.
Right. It wasn't totally clean, probably,
And we take for granted glasses, you know, that they would be available, but obviously not as much. So,
I mean, I was in fourth grade before they discovered that I couldn't see.
Yeah.
You know, so you just, humans adapt. Yeah. To their environment, you know, they adapt to whatever and figure out ways to get around it.
And as you started with 1917, it's before the flu epidemic, which, of course, you start getting real issues that relate to putting kids together in one room and all of that. Yes, we're going to have to do another. We have to do another show.
I know. I have, actually, on the Spanish flu, because my grandmother lived through that, and that was her memoirs.
And the poor Spanish, because it didn't really start in Spain, I don't think, but it's called Spanish influenza.
I think that's where they discovered it, maybe.
Possibly, yeah.
I do know that 50 million people died from that flu, and there were more soldiers died from the flu than from a combat than injury.
From combat. Yeah, and it was horrible combat with all of the trench warfare.
Right.
The only other thing I thought, well, I would mention is about the central schoolhouse, because it was a beautiful schoolhouse and well-maintained, and it was actually extremely modern. And it was inspected by the state all the time, and they condemned it, which they should not have, anyway, to build a new school. My husband actually went to second grade there.
Nice.
And he went to kindergarten in the train depot. It used to be parked over... come and go. It was adjacent to there. Yeah, to that. And he went to kindergarten there. And I'm like, you must really be old, because he's falling in with all this history. He could remember his teachers, too, and everything. I mean,
I remember a couple of teachers. It's true.
Yeah. Miss Carlson, Dorothy Carlson taught high school.
Right.
She taught. I was in her English class, and Margaret taught the elementaries and then became the principal, later on. But they were those ladies. They gave their all to education, educating the students of Idaho Springs anyway.
But I should put that, the tape that Greg did of Laverne Bolin and Margaret Carlson is wonderful, aside from the fact that the two of them are as nervous as can be, and they have written out papers, and they have things like, now let's have a drink of tea. And you don't know if they really have tea or not, but it's great fun. I've been trying to improve the digital version, so anyway, we put that out. But we need to come back to this. I mean, there's the plumber school, there's the mechanical school. When does the school get torn down?
And we didn't talk about the Alice School.
Yes. Yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So need to talk
about
that.
Yeah, and Alice School, I don't have a lot of information on it, other than I know a couple of the teachers.
Yeah, I think that I know that Margaret Carlson got her start teaching at that school.
I think Tom Elliott's mom, I think Mrs. Mrs. Elliott, I think, taught up there. Anyway, and there's also, if we go into the 20th century a little bit more, there are wonderful reports on Arbor Day, because Arbor Day at 8,000, 7,000, 8,000 feet tended to be a pretty rough time of year. Well, we were going to plant a tree, but they're it's still covered with snow.
Right. But, I mean, they really did celebrate Arbor Day, which we don't.
Yep. Anymore. Well, it's rolled into Earth Day now, so there's always has to be a something in April. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's a start, but there's so much information on this. Mm-hmm.
We were talking off mic earlier about what the average school tenure was, and probably Chris thinks what.
I think it's sixth grade, it may be eighth. There are laws that regulate that, and I'm not sure when the laws come in, how far they go, and then they take it up to eighth grade. One of the references about the Silver Plume School is there was somebody who was teaching evening classes in Silver Plume later on, which was really good for the kids who were working in the mines, and they could then continue with studies. So a different world than one we are accustomed to.
Well, I'm going to say that there were vestiges of that world even when, as my children were in school in the 90s, there were children that she went to school with who said, why do I need an education? I'm going to work at the mine.
And I don't need it.
That I think that's why so many of the children weren't educated formally.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and there weren't child labor laws.
Yeah.
Were there?
Right.
That's part of it.
Until the 90s.
And when you say educated formally, because I think they were educated at home.
Were. Right.
They learned to write. Yeah. They learned math. They
learned their parents,
living skills, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So they did. They weren't like a lot of people running around who couldn't read and write here,
Silver Plume, in 1893, the school board has sort of a white elephant on their hands in the old schoolhouse, which occupies the site where the new building will be erected. And then shortly after that, the old schoolhouse made a beautiful blaze at any rate.
Positive attitude.
Positive attitude. Anyway.
But excuse me, Chris, but the school building in Silver Plume. Mm-hmm. It is in an amazingly great condition after all these years.
It's been a wonderful facility. It is. Yeah. It's great. And they've taken care of it, loving care.
Yeah.
And it's been, tough.
They built it to last, you know. So.
Well, except if you talk to Michael Kelly, he knew that if he... it was obviously a foundation that he needed to put in on the Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'd like to close with one comment about Empire. There's been a lot of strong opinions over the years expressed in a variety of ways.
and as there is everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And it's, well, like the meeting, you know, the Georgetown meeting, the first thing they do is break ground, and there is somebody there saying, well, that isn't the way that I would have done it.
Thank you for joining us again today.
Very interesting program.
Thank you. I just love this conversation. I'm going to miss next month. I'll be away from the mic, but you guys can carry on without me, that's for sure.
We surely will.
We will.
That's right. Okay. Thanks for joining us, folks. And until next week, take care. All right. Let's do this. Ah.